Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, college football fans across the nation and around the world. This is Tim May with the Tim May Podcast. Zach Barnett, my co-pilot this week from footballscoop.com. Zach, thanks for joining the Tim May Podcast. Notice I'm just getting right into this flight, my man.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah. Hey, man, I've been wanting to have you on for a while, and I really have enjoyed following footballscoop.com, which you ramrod. Is that the correct term, ramrod?
Yeah, I think that's my direction. That's all my business card. I'm the Ramrodder.
But you graduate from University of Texas, so all you guys, the Longhorns, et cetera, you got to learn how to drive those steers, right? I'm right on that too, right?
Yeah, you don't get a diploma unless you can ride a steer.
Hey, ironically, my baby brother, hell, he's 64 years old. Tony has a weekend farm outside LaGrange, Texas, right outside LaGrange, and he has two Longhorns on it, but one of them, I think, is Bear Bryant. His nickname is Bear, and the other one's Bryant or something like that. So he's a big Alabama fan. But he's got Longhorn in his blood. You see where I'm going with that, right?
Yeah. There's something that seems wrong about Longhorns named after Bear Bryant, but that's another discussion.
Exactly. Actually, I think I got their names wrong, but it doesn't matter. It has some kind of Alabama affiliation. But I digress. My surviving brother, Tony. But I digress. Obviously, that's not what I got in this with you about. Man, we're in some strange times right now in regards to the NIL, the transfer portal, and all that kind of rigmarole. But before I get into that with you, because, you know, you've got, like I say, you cover the waterfront when it comes to especially college football stuff going on, from coaches' jobs, coaches' vacancies getting filled, to just what's going on with the NCAA, what's not going on with the NCAA, and all that kind of stuff. But before we get into that, you had an interesting take this week on the recently held draft. I'm talking about the NFL draft, and where you kind of ranked the colleges from a point standpoint on what kind of effective or input draft they had, and just kind of fill people in with that. Obviously, you had to have Georgia number one because they had 15 guys taken. It seemed like everybody on their defense got taken. I'm interesting to see how good their defense is going to be this year. Just kind of give people a little insight on that top six, because I think Ohio State was number six with only six guys taken. Explain to people how that happened, but go ahead.
Yeah, so, I mean, for years I would get frustrated at, you know, it basically just preschool arithmetic. Well, this team had eight guys drafted, this team had seven guys drafted, this team had six, so therefore the team with eight had drafted. But as we all know, the idea of the NFL draft is that the picks are not created equally. You know, it's a staircase, and as you go on, you're a little bit lower, a little bit lower in value. So my idea is, I finally decided to do something about it. And the grand formula is basically the first pick is worth 250 points. The second pick's worth 249 and 248, and down we go until.
Wait a minute, that's very complicated. Now go ahead.
Yeah. It had to be complicated for a Longhorn graduate, or it had to be so simple, or I couldn't understand it myself. So,
I know. You run out of fingers and toes. I know what you're talking about, but go ahead now.
Yeah, so eventually, you know, once you get down to late seventh round, like, you'd rather have a guy drafted than not, obviously, but is it really that great of a compliment if your guy's a 258th draft pick? He's not the same as the first draft pick and shouldn't count the same. Yeah. So last year I started doing it. I really wish I had started – 5-10 years ago, but I started with the 2021 draft. Yeah. And this year's again. And I, you know, each year I'm interested in the findings. Like Georgia obviously won the draft for 2,304. I call them selection points, but their draft came in behind, you know, LSU's 2020 draft, and then that I think it was the 2004 Ohio State class.
Yeah.
Both of those classes had 14 guys. And they had higher selection points because, I mean, I think three of Georgia's guys were seventh rounders. So, you know, great that they're drafted, but not really all that valuable in the long grand scheme of things. You know, they're a coin flip team and make their team out of camp.
Yeah.
And then, you know, for second place, you know, Alabama had seven picks, but they had 1,366 selection points. You know, I'm I'm scrolling over here to my cheat sheet. I wish I could tell you I had all this stuff memorized.
But no, go ahead, man.
I mean, when you have multiple first rounders, that's worth more than multiple, you know, even five or six second rounders. Sure. And then Cincinnati, you know, came in third ahead of LSU with 10. You know, Cincinnati had 1,302 points. LSU at 10 had 1,185. You know, where I think it gets real interesting is, like, for example, USC had three picks. And Florida had three picks, both, but they're sandwiched around them is Ole Miss with six because their guys were taken higher. And, you know, those picks are more valuable. So we value them higher in our system. And yeah. So, you know, it's nothing groundbreaking. You know, as I wrote in the original piece announcing it last year, I'm suspicious that I'm even the first person to even think of this because it's such a simple thing. But I think it gives us some good insights, not only into, you know, who won this year's draft, but, you know, I think it helps us settle some arguments from years past as well.
Yeah. You know, and was curious about it, like, you know, I had Thayer Munford. I expected Thayer Munford from Ohio State to go anywhere from the fourth to the sixth round. He went in the seventh round. If he'd gone in the sixth, Ohio State would have been fifth on your ranking with just six guys taken, you know, because obviously that run of wide receivers. I thought Jameson Williams, he should have – half of his points should have gone to Ohio State, don't you think? I mean, really?
Exactly. I mean, yeah, the Texas people were saying, oh, well, USC had Keontae Ingram counted. He spent 3 years. That counts for us. We get at least half a point. But, yeah, his 12 point or his 12th pick was, what, 249 points. All those go to Alabama.
Yeah. Well, this is what's curious to me, though. I'm looking at right now. It's like you took the national champions over the last many years, going back at least 20 years to the 2002 Miami team. I'm talking about a little bit of the top 10 here. The 2020 LSU it's not necessarily their national champions, but these are remnants. Some of these drafts are remnants of what was those championship teams. But the 2020 LSU team has had 14 draft picks so far for 2,383 points. Number two on that is the 2016 Ohio State draft. I think the draft, but it was the 2014 and 15 guys, you know, like Joey Bosa, et cetera, were taken in that from the 2014 national championship team. They had 12 draft picks so far with 2,351 points. That's the number two ranked, you know, team of teams who have won national championships. And you know, in the Ohio State, the 2004 draft with Ohio State had 14 players taken for 1,999. That's ranked number five. And of course, those were remnants of that 2002 national championship team. It's funny, Ohio State, in my opinion, had better teams in 2003 and 2015 than maybe the year before, except they had crap that happened, you know, and kept them from playing for the championship one way or the other. But I think it's a great way of looking back on some of these programs and seeing just the depth of some of those, because you actually call out the national championship teams in particular. The 2017 Alabama team, overall, over the years that they were eligible for the draft, had 39 players drafted for number one pick, number one in basically on your rankings. 2001 Miami, 38 players taken. 2015 Alabama national championship, 34. 2014 Ohio State national championship team, 30, and those are your top four with the points included. And it does kind of put in perspective the blue bloods, doesn't it, to a certain extent, and who's no longer a blue blood.
Yeah, I mean, I think my formula had 2017 Alabama ahead of that 01 Miami team after last year, and they had with a lower number of draft picks. And then this past year, I think they had two guys that were on that team that were still sticking around at 2021 that put them over the Hurricanes in terms of total draft picks. But, I mean, they're 600 points ahead in total points. So it's going to be interesting to follow moving forward if this Georgia team can pass them, or, you know, maybe the 2022 national champion Buckeyes can pass them. You know, I think they've certainly set a standard for just depth of talent. I mean, you look at that team. I've got them right over here. I mean, you've got, let's see, in the 2018, they had the number 11 pick, the number 13 pick, 22, 26, 93. Then you go to the 2019 draft. They had Quinton Williams went third. Jonah Williams went 11th. Yeah. Josh Jacobs went 20th. Irv Smith went 50th. And then the 2020 draft, you had Tua went fifth. Jedrick Wills went 10th. Henry Ruggs, 12th. Jerry Jeudy, 15th. And then 2021, you had Devontae Smith went 10th. Alex Jones went 15. Alex Leatherwood – or Mac Jones went 15. Alex Leatherwood went 17. Najee Harris went 24.
Yeah.
And then they had two more guys taking this past year. I mean, just the amount of top 10 picks, top 50 picks is just – obviously, it's unmatched. It's astounding to think all those guys were really on the same team. And then to think that, like, they were lucky to win that game, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think they were ever actually winning that game until – Tua threw that fateful rainbow pass. And then, you know, we can get into that Rose Bowl that Oklahoma and Georgia had when, you know, my theory is that if Oklahoma holds on to win that Rose Bowl, they match up better with Georgia than with Alabama than Georgia did. They might not even won that national championship, but with all that unbelievable talent on that team.
Yeah. Hey, can you call up that 2014 Ohio State? Have you got that on that same list?
Yes.
Right there?
Let's see. So you had 2014 Ohio State. You had that year, it was the 2015 draft was a small draft class. You had Delvin Smith with 37. Jeff Auerman, is that how you say his name?
Yeah, 92. Auerman, yeah.
Yeah, Dorian Grant went 121. Then you had a couple guys go 180. And then it was that next draft that had Bosa at 3, Zeke at 4, Eli Apple at 10, Taylor Decker at 16, Darren Lee at 20, Michael Thomas at 47, Von Bell at 61, Adolphus Washington 80, Braxton Miller 85, Nick Bennett 94, Josh Perry 102. I mean, it just went. Cardale Jones was the lowest guy drafted at 139.
Crazy.
Still in the top, close to the top half of that draft.
And just think, if Cardale Jones had left after the national championship game, he might have been one of the top five players taken. You know what I mean? The way, you know, in that 15 draft, it's crazy.
I know. I mean, obviously, the juniors or the sophomores on carried that team. In 2017, you had seven guys taken. You had Marshawn Lattimore, Malik Hooker, Gerrion Conley, Curtis Samuel went 40. In 18, you had five more guys, Billy Price at 21, Tyquan Lewis at 64. And then 19, two more guys. Paris Campbell went 59th and Terry McLaurin went 76th.
Yeah, crazy. Wow. Well, anyway, hey, real quick, before we go, before I move on to the next thing, what did you think about – do you think the draft – like, I always have guys on pre-draft. Like, I had Albert Breer on from Monday Morning Quarterback, and we talked about this. I brought it up, you know. It's funny, if you get past the top two or three rounds, though, how teams have already zeroed in on who they're after. You know what I mean? And it's not – you know, the draft doesn't – I think you agree with me with this. The draft doesn't necessarily reflect – an exact top to bottom pick of the available talent. Agreed? I mean, because some teams just fall in love with a guy or fall out of love with a guy and take somebody else. But that is another factor. You kind of have to weigh into that, isn't it, a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, once you get past the top 100, I mean, there's a reason those guys are still there.
Yeah.
And so each team you're looking for, well, we need a tight end. Okay, here's the tight ends available. This guy is not perfect in this direction. This guy's not perfect in this direction. So, you know, are we going to take the guy that's coachable, that's maybe not as big and strong, or are we going to take the guy that's bigger and stronger that didn't have the production? You know, it's certainly, you know, there's a lot of that aspect to it. And then once you get to the seventh round, you know, you kind of don't want to be drafted because at that point, you know, you have more options if you're an undrafted free agent. So the draft certainly isn't perfect, but it's the most perfect evaluation tool we have here for college football
talent. Yeah, I agree with that about the seventh round. I always tell players, I go, the only thing that's good for you that you got drafted in the seventh round, the one thing is that they did draft you, meaning, you know, nobody likes to admit they make mistakes, just like in recruiting. You know what I mean? That's why the recruited guy always gets a little bit of more of an edge than the preferred walk on, so to speak. But it is interesting. Hey, real quick, before we move on, I wanted to throw this at you too. Have you ever heard of a wide receiver room or any other room, position room, having a night like the 2020 Ohio State wide receiver room had, with going in order, Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, and Jameson Williams, who transferred obviously to Alabama for the 2021 season. They went in order. What was that? 9, 10, and 11, or 10, 11, and 12. I get them mixed up in my head, but that was crazy, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think I guess you could put the Georgia defensive line room, the guys they had led by Trayvon Walker, going number one. And then you go back to that 2017 Ohio State team, or the 2017 Alabama team, excuse me, the wide receivers that they had.
Yeah.
The Ruggs, Judy, Smith. I mean, I think it'll be fun to compare the success, the NFL success those two groups had. And then I think, you know, the at one time Alabama's quarterback room had what, Mac Jones, Tua Tagovailoa, and then Jalen Hurts as well.
Yeah, Jalen Hurts, yeah.
And then, I mean, that's a ridiculous amount of talent as well. And then, you know, Oklahoma at one time had Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray, two Heisman winners. So I certainly think that Ohio State group belongs in that. I mean, clearly, I mean, I'm probably in the majority here when I say that Jackson Smith and Jigba is the best of those guys, and he's still in college. So just obscene amount of talent that Ohio State had.
And keep in mind, a guy you may have heard of, his dad, Marvin Harrison Jr., keep him in mind. And Emeka Egbuka is going to be a star. I mean, you know, you saw him a little bit last year returning kicks, and then the Rose Bowl, they got their bonus spring game by getting to play those guys when the two guys, Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson, opted out of that game. But yeah, it's crazy what Brian Hartline's put together. I think you agree with that, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, Jackson Smith and Jigba just about won that Rose Bowl by himself as much as one wide receiver can, but any catches he didn't make, I mean, Marvin Harrison Jr. was right there. I mean, I think, what do you have, like 180 yards? Like an outstanding game.
A couple of touchdowns.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Not even close to leading his team in receiving yards.
Yeah, it's crazy. Hey, let's move on real quick, because we're in the craziest time in college football history, modern, ancient, whatever you want to look at. And like I told you, I was looking on your timeline, footballscoop.com, but basically on your the Twitter timeline today. And like I said, you know, you guys ran a story about Nebraska, about Scott Frost getting in trouble for using, basically, summing it up here, basically using quality controls or graduate assistants or analysts to help coach, for want of another term, you know, during a couple of years ago. The NCAA looked into that, and obviously that's, quote, a no-no, end quote, you know, if somebody's looking over your shoulder. But they got put on probation for that. I think Scott Frost even got a one-year show cause penalty, if I'm not mistaken about that.
And 5-day suspension.
Yeah, and they're paying some other penalties, including some guys have already missed some coaching time, some guys who will miss. But on the same timeline, just a few clicks down the road, is how the NCAA is looking at relaxing or doing away with those kind of regulations on quality control coaches, graduate assistants, which can help coach, by the way, but analysts, basically doing away with any idea that they can't help coach. It's a weird time we live in, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the perfect example of what we're living in right now, that the rule that Scott Frost and Nebraska got in trouble for, 6 months from now, maybe even less than that, might not even be a rule anymore.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Kelvin Sampson got fired at Indiana for breaking a rule. It's not a rule anymore. Like,
yeah.
It's changing, you know, incredibly fast, changing by the hour. And it just seems like, in particular, I think the removing the the cap on accountable coaches, obviously everybody figures if they remove the rule January 1st, January 2nd, Nick Saban is going to have five different salaried offensive line coaches, and they're all going to make $1 million a year. And I guess if he does that, so be it. But, you know, we hear from so many coaches that are just burnt out, trying to, you know, looking for ways out of the business, because what they're asked to do is just, you know, beyond what one person can do and keep a healthy, functional life together.
Yeah.
I mean, with all the recruiting that has to be done, you know, changing, you know, opening up the spring recruiting like they did a few years ago makes recruiting more of a 12-month thing. The portal's close to a 12-month thing. Like, these guys need help. And so to be able to let analysts coach on the field can lessen some of that load for your position coaches. And at the same time, you can hire guys who basically are just traveling salesmen for you and just recruit. You know, certainly if you're an assistant coach listening to this, you're going to be expected to go on the road. You're going to be expected to put in the hours, grinding the tape, you know, evaluating practice, evaluating your opponent. But this will at least lessen that so that hopefully good people aren't leaving the business to go coach in the NFL or just leaving it entirely. You know, we need to keep, you know, good men coaching. We need, it's an important job. So hopefully, you know, I'm sure it will get abused, but hopefully in the long run, it will keep more people in the profession.
Zach, a couple of years ago, I said that the transfer portal is going to just change everything about college football, about big time college sports. And then you add on top of that now the NIL, and now they, of course, the name, image, and likeness situation, which is almost running amok as we speak. It will, maybe it'll find some balance, maybe it won't. But when you put those two together, this, like you were talking about with coaches, coaches not only have to recruit, but they have to re-recruit now, you know. And now, you know, used to be bag men, but now you've got legal guys putting together deals for big-time college football and college basketball players. And, you know, a great example, that's what's going on at the University of Miami right now with the player who's basically threatening to leave unless he gets a better a better NIL deal, you know, from one of the guys down there that's kind of like handing out those kind of situations, almost like I'm not going to say candy, but it's almost close to that. But, yeah, where do you think this is going, man?
Yeah, I mean, I'm almost kind of surprised we didn't see more of that. The situation with Miami basketball, Isaiah Wong, and then you had Jordan Addison, the Pitt receiver who, you know, looks like he's going to USC. I'm really surprised we didn't see more of that because at this point, you can, you know, the deadline was Sunday night. If you're an all-conference player, you know, you got to have someone in here saying, hey, enter the portal. Your school's not going to lose your scholarship at your school. Just see who's out there, see what you can get, and then maybe your school matches it. You come back and you made yourself who knows how much money, or maybe someone else values you more. Go play for Alabama, Georgia. Like, I'm really surprised, you know, we didn't see just imagine if Bryce Young had entered the portal last night. And so, well, you know, Michigan will pay me $5 million, or, you know, LSU will pay me this, A&M will pay me this. You know, I'm really surprised we didn't see something like that.
Yeah.
But I think right now we're just in the growing pains of the era where players had no freedom at all. And then now, you know, I consider myself to be a player's advocate, but they've got too much freedom right now. And
hey,
so I think the only way out of this from where I sit, you know, certainly Greg Sankey hasn't called me and asked for my advice. But the only way out of this I see is to just go all the way in the other direction and just fully professionalize it. Sign them to contracts, guarantee them some money. Maybe you limit how much they can make or when they can access it, and you limit their movement. You know, this is a 3-year deal. You got to stay here all 3 years, and then after that, you're free, whatever. And then you got to get a players' union, and then at that point, it's collectively bargained. And then at that point, any gripes that players have is with their own union and not with the laws and this coach is mean to me or the AD is being mean to me. Or, you know, the governors, I don't like the laws we've written. It's, hey, talk to your union at that point. But I think we're getting there. But, you know, there's so many people that aren't ready to have that conversation. Until then, it's the Wild West.
And by the way, some of you are touching on when you're talking about the Miami basketball player, you know, that's holding out, so to speak. I think the reason you didn't see a lot of that in I don't think people didn't think of it. You know what I mean? I think that's coming. I mean, it's funny you brought that up because that's exactly what I'm thinking. Next year, about this time, I think it's going to be a real free-for-all from the standpoint of, well, you know, I can always go back to where I was, but my toe is in the water. Let's see what you got, you know, and that's got to happen, doesn't it?
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, we the NCAA published some numbers last week that showed that entering the portal is, if you're a rank-and-file player, it's a bad idea. It's
right.
An astounding number of guys – you know, that they found, according to their numbers, were still in the portal, or they transferred, they were on scholarship somewhere and transferred somewhere else without a scholarship. So you really got to know your worth. And, you know, a lot of guys don't find out what their coaches really think of them until it's too late.
Yeah. Well, that's what I said a while ago. You got to re-recruit the guys you've already got. But then, like you said, the reason they don't necessarily want to, like, turn the tap off totally is there obviously players leave. You could say they're encouraged or they're being told, hey, you know what, boy, it's just not working out here. You know, maybe you ought to try the portal as opposed to just kicking a guy, you know, to the curb. I think a lot of that goes on, obviously, as you look around some of the major programs, right? I mean, so they don't necessarily want to lose the ability to do that and come out looking okay. You know,
right.
You know,
and, so, and anybody that complains about the portal is at the same time doing the same thing that they complain about. Like the offensive five-star offensive lineman, Josh Connerly, who was one of those late deciders, looked like everybody was going to go, you know, all the experts were predicting USC, and there was a late flip to Oregon. And everyone thinks, oh, he probably got an NIL deal. Well, then now USC turns around and does the same thing to Pitt with Jordan Addison. And then over the weekend, I had an FCS coach DM me saying, I don't feel sorry for Pitt. Their quarterback tried to get our tight end, you know, last week. Like he sent him a DM, tried to get him here. So anybody that's complaining about it, they're probably telling the truth, but they're also probably not telling the whole truth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Kind of like the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial right now. But that's another that's another story. Hey, last thing for you, man. Is it amazing? Because you kind of created this niche for yourself here with footballscoop.com. And is it amazing the interest that just keeps growing? And I think it's, like I said, I think it's going to, you're exporting a situation that's going to be, that's even going to grow bigger for you with all the stuff, all the news that's going on 24/7 now. But did you envision this, you know, 5 or 6, 8, 10 years ago when you were first getting into this?
Well, yeah. I mean, for me personally, I knew from early on that I was a college football nerd without much talent elsewhere. So I better figure out a way to make a career in this. Otherwise, it's going to be a rough road for me. So I've been lucky so far, you know, knock on wood. But, you know, when I started this job, you know, or people, family members asked me, like, oh, you're a college football writer. Yeah. So what do you write about in the offseason? There is no offseason. You know, there's times when games are going, and there's times when there's no games, but there's really no off season. I mean, we've been saying that for a long time, but I mean, it's even more so now. Like, you know, we get slow moments here and there, but they're really just moments. And I mean, you know, I'm not sitting here complaining. Like the schedule, the amount of time that coaches put into this stuff and putting their paychecks on the line with what happens, you know, every weekend. Like, you know, a lot of people begrudge the money that college coaches make. I do not. Like those guys, whatever they get paid, they earn.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not just coming out of the trees. You know what I mean? I mean, there are guys down in the lesser divisions, past the Power Five that aren't making anywhere near the money, you know, that those guys are. Hey, I wanted to run one other quick thing by you. It is amazing. I had Eddie George on my podcast a few weeks ago, you know, celebrating basically his first full year as Tennessee State head coach. You see what Coach Prime has done down at Jackson State, but there are more opportunities than ever for some college football players, right, to find their paradise, because they really like that HBCU. They like the opportunities the HBCU offers them. I'm talking about Eddie and Prime, but to have those kind of guys running those kind of programs, it's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I will have to say that the Deion story has been, you know, I've been doing this 10 years now. The Deion story has been probably one of the top three most interesting, you know, stories I've covered in my time doing this. Like, you know, we were early on that. We knew, we had a Jackson State source tell us, you know, months before it initially happened that, hey, it looks like Deion's going to be our head coach. You know, of course, he was a Cowboy. You know, I grew up with him, watching him on the Cowboys. And then, you know, he'd been in coaching, like, high school football. He had the Prime Prep Academy. Like, you know, that ended in disaster. And I was like, okay, you know, we'll follow this. And he'll be out of a job 6 games in, piss everybody off. And the guy has, I mean, proven everyone wrong at every turn. Like, he's so far, I mean, he's done everything he said he was going to do. Like, he said he was going to fill Veteran Memorial Stadium, and he's done that. Like, he's built a team. They have the number one player in the country. They won the SWAC. Like, he's got other guys, Eddie George coaching in the SWAC. Like, you know, we had a story, John Bryce wrote a story for us about the opportunities that lower guys are getting to move up and, you know, take fellowships in the NFL because more people are paying attention to SWAC football. Like, he's totally rejuvenated, you know, HBCU football right now. And it's been just fascinating to watch, and I hope it continues. And I certainly hope it has a happy ending because, it's great for the sport.
By the way, I was going to correct one thing. I think Tennessee State's in the Ohio Valley Conference.
Yeah, I was going to.
Yeah, but they have.
Because I think it was Howard.
Right.
That just moved to the CAA. Like, yeah, I mean, that's the Big Ten of the FCS.
But they have aspirations to move up to division. I mean, FBS, you know, I mean, you know, down the road. And I think, you know, we'll see be interesting to see where Prime goes with all this. But, hey, Zach Barnett of footballscoop.com, ladies and gentlemen, it's not just a must-read every day. It's a must-read once an hour, right? Did I have that right?
Exactly, yes. Yeah. My wife would very much appreciate it if everyone read the site once an hour.
Anybody wants to send a donation his way, do that, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, Zach, appreciate you joining the Tim May podcast, my man.
Tim, thank you for having me. It was fun.
And ladies and gentlemen, until next week, I'll see you then.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.